Time for a quick break to talk about McDonald's. Mornings are for mixing and matching at McDonald's. For just $3, mix and match two of your favorite breakfast items, including a sausage McMuffin, sausage biscuit, sausage burrito, and hash browns. Make it even better with a delicious medium iced coffee. With McDonald's mix and match, you can't go wrong. Price and participation may vary. Cannot be combined with any other offer or combo meal. Single item at regular price.
Well, if you thought we learned a lot about the general election from the State of the Union, just wait until we show you everything that happened this weekend. Joe Biden and Donald Trump held dueling rallies in Georgia last night and offered drastically different visions for the country. I'll let you guess which event happened in Marjorie Taylor Greene's home district. Governor Tim Walz is a close Biden ally and the chair of the Democratic Governors Association, and I'm going to get his reaction to all of it. Plus, on Friday, Donald Trump posted a $91 million bond in the E. Jean Carroll case. 24 hours later, it sure seems like he defamed her again. I'll ask the law firm of Weissman and Katyal if Trump's tab could be going up. Also today, Katie Britt's response to the State of the Union was really something, and she was back on the air this morning. The Daily Show's Jordan Klepper is here with his response to the response. And later, he was a senator, a presidential nominee, a secretary of state, and a climate envoy. Now, as my old boss, John Kerry, prepares to step away from government, we sit down for his exit interview. Well, if it wasn't clear before, and it probably was to you, the events of this week cemented it. Joe Biden and Donald Trump will be the major party nominees this November. Let's just get it out of the way and say that for a whole host of reasons, this will not be a regular election. For the first time in almost 70 years, Americans will get a rematch of a presidential race. Let's start there. For the first time in over 100 years, Americans will have a president and former president on their ballot. And for the first time in history, one of the candidates will be running under criminal indictment. You know the one. We've seen both these guys before. We know who they are. Which means that for the first time in a very, very long time, the presidential race won't include a splashy outsider change candidate who's introducing himself to the public. And yet, that seems to be exactly how Donald Trump wants to sell himself. The New York Times reported this weekend that according to Trump's advisors and allies, he will again seek to claim the change mantle. Believe it or not, they're trying to position him, the guy who was president less than 4 years ago, as an outsider. As Kellyanne Conway said of Trump, quote, he's not an incumbent, he's an insurgent. Now, at this point, I have some real questions about calling Donald Trump an outsider. He's essentially become the Republican Party. But setting that aside, change can often be a winning message. I mean, it's how Ronald Reagan won in 1980. It's how Bill Clinton ran in 1992. It's how Barack Obama ran and won in 2008. It's even how Donald Trump won back in 2016. Because it's a simple story to tell, change versus the same. As even one Democratic strategist put it in the New York Times, if the choice is, would you rather be stay the course or change, I would always take change in this world we are in. But here's the problem with that kind of shorthand political strategery. We need to be clear about what change would actually mean under Donald Trump. Because Donald Trump is not a normal candidate. We shouldn't talk about him like he is. And he's not running any normal message of change. Donald Trump and MAGA's vision of change is not forward-looking. It's completely regressive. Joe Biden made that point in his State of the Union speech on Thursday, as well as a number of other speeches this week, and he's been gone quite a role. He's been trying to lay out clearly what the change would look like. A world that's friendly to autocracy and against the rule of law. A world where reproductive rights are stripped from women and immigrants are dehumanized. And listen, I understand if you don't want to take Joe Biden's remarks as gospel, but Donald Trump has no problem speaking for himself. And when you compare the two side by side, the contrast is really something to behold.
It can tell you a lot about a person who he keeps company with. And yesterday he was hosting at his club, Viktor Orban, who says he doesn't think democracy works. Call him a fantastic leader.
I had dinner last night with a great gentleman from Hungary, Prime Minister of Hungary, Viktor Orban. Very, very tough. Some people don't like him because he's very tough.
Instead of celebrating the contribution of immigrants to our country, to our economy and our communities, Donald Trump calls them vermin.
And I will stop this invasion. I'm going to do it. I will stop the killing. I will stop the bloodshed. I will end the agony of our people, the plunder of our cities, the sacking of our towns, the violation of our citizens, and the conquest of our country. They're conquering our country.
But we all know Donald Trump sees a different America, an American story of resentment, revenge, and retribution. That's not me. That's not you.
We have a very corrupt country. I fired Comey. I fired a lot of bad people, but I didn't know it ran so deep. It runs deep. We're going to get rid of the rest of them. I know who most of them are, too.
So is Donald Trump for change? Sure. Sure he is. He's for changing our democracy into an autocratic state like Viktor Orban's. That's what he's for. He's for demonizing migrants and normalizing the language of Adolf Hitler. And he is for using the power of the presidency for retribution above all else. By definition, sure, that would be a whole lot of change. But let's be clear-eyed about the kind of change that Donald Trump is saying he wants to inflict in a second term. Starting us off today is Minnesota's Democratic Governor Tim Walz. I've been looking forward to talking to him and having him on for a while. He's the chair of the Democratic Governors Association. Governor, thank you so much for taking the time. I just want to start with kind of my thesis there, because even Democratic strategists will say, and they have over the weekend, Trump has an advantage of sorts because he's running as the change candidate. But what I was curious from you, I mean, you're the governor of Minnesota. You're very popular. You've talked to voters a lot. When you go out there and voters say, I don't want more of the same, I want someone who's going to mix things up, what do you say to them?
Well, good morning, Jen, and thank you. I think your comparison and your contrast was exactly right. It's the folks know this is a binary choice. Do you want someone who wakes up in the morning that's competent and compassionate, or do you want somebody that creates chaos, conspiracy theory, and all of the things you hear there? That short clip there should terrify a lot of folks, and I think the good news is the majority of folks here in Minnesota and across the country do believe that. Look, we lived under Donald Trump's presidency. That meant people were dying of COVID where he was telling us that it'd be gone in a week. We saw Joe Biden come in and tackle these tough issues from the economy to COVID and now putting a positive vision. Donald Trump's been in Minnesota a lot. He comes to do these big rallies, gets everybody in red hats and doesn't deliver a damn thing. Joe Biden comes out here, gets $1 billion for the most important bridge in Minnesota, connecting Wisconsin and Minnesota on the Great Lakes, where trade matters, things matter, jobs matter. So we'll get out there and tell the story. And I think this week watching some of the media colleagues wake up and say, where's, you know, look at this, a new Joe Biden. No, it's not. It's the same competent Joe Biden that's been delivering for us. Governors understand that because we have to do it every single day.
Doesn't deliver a damn thing. Someone out there is making T-shirts with your quote there, Governor. I wanted to ask you, I mean, Minnesota has an independent streak. I think it's a point of pride, the independent streak. But in 2016, independent candidates picked up over 5% of the vote in the state. How concerned are you about the impact? Now, we're in the general election. We're fully in it, of third-party candidates like RFK Jr. or Cornel West or Jill Stein or others hurting the president in Minnesota.
Yeah, we do have an independent streak. One of my predecessors was a professional wrestler and governor of Minnesota with Jesse Ventura.
True.
So, yeah, it's out there. But look, I think people are hearing what you're hearing. And I appreciate, Jen, your framing this. This is not a normal election. Quit treating it like a horse race. Quit treating the normal metrics that are out there. And look, we've seen this. Every time Donald Trump's on the ballot, Democrats win. We saw, Andy Beshear win Kentucky last year with a progressive message about job creation in that state. We've seen special elections go, whether it's up in New York's third. So, look, I know that folks are going to be out there. I know at this point in time, we're a broad party. We don't all wear those same stupid red hats. We got a lot of different ideas, and there's this tendency to look. But Joe Biden's consolidating that. His message is clear, and the results are very obvious to folks. So I think as we move towards closer to November, the binary choice between a Trump absolute chaos and a slipping away of democracy versus a guy who simply gets it done. And that was apparent in the State of the Union. His new ad is spectacular, and I think it just tells the story. You're going to see more and more of that.
But do you worry? I mean, does it keep you up at night that a third party candidate could take a bunch of the vote from Joe Biden and help Trump in your state?
Oh, yeah, this is going to. Well, I think, you know, I think they should be worried, even in my state, where we had folks that were expressing a deep desire and a dissatisfaction with the situation in Gaza. But at the end of the day, Trump lost more votes to Nikki Haley than the president did on that. And I don't know you're going to consolidate around this message of, you know, it's Mad Max beyond Thunderdome vision of America. That's not what's there. And I think at the end of the day, when you go in there, it's not a protest vote this time. We don't have a luxury of saying, oh, I wish I had a perfect candidate. None of us are perfect. This is a binary choice. It could not be clearer. So those third party folks, look, in Minnesota, home of the Mayo Clinic, RFK Jr.'s nonsense around vaccine denial is not going to go anywhere. And our own homegrown candidate has thrown his support behind the president, as he should have. And that, I think that bodes well.
You're also the chair of the Democratic Governors Association. You have a full plate, I think it's fair to say. One of the alarming things that happened this week was, of course, in North Carolina. The Democrats, I should say, have a great candidate in Josh Stein. The Lieutenant Governor Mark Robinson is the nominee on the Republican side. He's probably more conspiracy-addled than almost anyone. Donald Trump loves him. He referred to him as Martin Luther King on steroids, which is a bizarre thing to say. But what I'm curious about from your perspective is, how do you use the extreme nature of Mark Robinson to help drive out more vote in North Carolina, to help maybe put that in the win column for Joe Biden and, of course, for Josh Stein?
Yeah, I think that's right. And governors are delivering. I think folks across the country know if you've got a Democratic governor, your reproductive rights are protected. They're leaning into the issues around climate change, trying to do something around gun violence. And you saw it in North Carolina. 8 years of Roy Cooper vaulted North Carolina to the top job creation state. Expanded Medicaid expansion and protecting women's rights. And Josh Stein, the attorney general, simply delivers that, making North Carolina safe and prosperous for all. And then you've got Mark Robinson. I don't even know what to say. A Holocaust denier, someone who mocks the survivors of school shootings, continues to go down this road. But I think this is symptomatic. This is the party of Donald Trump now. This is the party of no vision. How is that rhetoric going to make anyone's life better? How is it going to make? He says teachers are evil people. Look, I'm going to take this personal. I'm a public school teacher. But I ask all your listeners out there to think about your fond memories of your fourth grade teacher and think about with your children when they go to school and the care that they're showing. To say that those are the evil people and his desire is to destroy the public schools, that message is going to be strong. And I'll say it once again, in every election, and I don't care where the polls are on this, every election since Donald Trump's been on, 18, 20, 22, Andy Beshear in 23, special elections, we're going to be there. So Mark Robinson, we're going to make sure people get to know Mark Robinson. We're going to get sure that he's very clear. He just used his own words is all we need. But the contrast is this, a compassionate, visionary leader like Josh Stein following in the incredible leadership that Roy Cooper provided. Folks in North Carolina know life is better when you have a governor that actually cares and is not in all these weird, bizarre conspiracy theories. So we're looking forward to it. We're going to do this across the country. We're going to win races from Washington to New Hampshire. We'll show people that when Democratic governors are in charge, family issues matter and compassion rules the day.
Governor Tim Walz, I think people are going to learn a lot more about the Lieutenant Governor of North Carolina. It's a race to watch for sure. Thank you so much for taking the time today. Really appreciate you joining us. And coming up, Donald Trump just posted a $92 million bond in the E. Jean Carroll defamation case, and he might have defamed her again last night. After the break, I'm going to ask Andrew Weissman and Neil Katyal about all of it. We're just getting started today, and we'll be right back.
Kent State's reputation in the fashion industry is something you would hear from everyone when you're in New York City.
I will say we're quite well known for being hard workers.
Kent is really known for delivering well-rounded students.
Kent has one of the most prestigious fashion programs in the U.S. and also internationally ranked.
Our alumni are in every corner of the industry, every job position that you can imagine.
They all are ready. They have all the courses. They have everything under their belt.
Time for a quick break to talk about McDonald's. Mornings are for mixing and matching at McDonald's. For just $3, mix and match two of your favorite breakfast items, including a sausage McMuffin, sausage biscuit, sausage burrito, and hash browns. Make it even better with a delicious medium iced coffee. With McDonald's mix and match, you can't go wrong. Price and participation may vary. Cannot be combined with any other offer or combo meal. Single item at regular price.
The Chubb Corporation is one of the world's largest insurance companies, and a subsidiary of that company is now the guarantor of Donald Trump's $91.6 million bond in the E. Jean Carroll case. The bond would cover Trump's costs if he loses his appeal or fails to pay damages. And if you're thinking how awfully convenient this all is for Trump, consider that Chubb's current CEO, Evan Greenberg, was appointed by Trump back in 2018 to serve on his White House Advisory Committee for Trade Policy and Negotiations. Really sounds like Trump dodged a bullet here. But just a reminder, Trump is still on the hook for more than $466 million in a separate civil fraud judgment. That amount is growing by $112,000 per day in interest. So how exactly does Trump pay up? Who is in a position to help him? And what could they possibly gain from Trump if he returns to the White House? Joining me now is our in-house law firm, everybody's favorite, Neil Katyal is the former acting U.S. Solicitor General. Andrew Weissman is the former general counsel at the FBI. He's also the co-author of a brand new best-selling book, The Trump Indictments, the Historic Charging Documents with Commentary. So, okay, Andrew, I want to start with something you tweeted. You tweeted, my guess, Trump may have someone like Elon Musk co-signing the Chubb bond so the bank is comfortable being on the hook for the judgment. Same could happen for the bond for the AG $450 million judgment. Can you explain to us what you mean, how that works, what you think is happening here?
Sure. Well, you know, listening to your first segment, Jen, about whether Donald Trump is going to be successful in running as an outsider, this is an example of his running not just as an outsider, but as an outlaw. And, you know, not just the criminal cases, but you have these civil cases where he has judgments. He has two up to $91 million in the E. Jean Carroll case and obviously the $450 million in the New York fraud case. And the concern in these civil cases with these civil judgments is who is the candidate beholden to? Is he somebody who is going to be making policy and being deferential to people who have put up money? And, you know, there's a simple way of looking at this is he has 450 million reasons to be deferential if somebody else is putting up the money or co-signing. So, for instance, Elon Musk, I'm not saying he is the co-signer, but, you know, he has said, I have not given up money. But that's not the only way that you can help Donald Trump get a bond. He can actually co-sign it. And so that issue of who is actually behind this is something that people who are voting should know.
It sounds, I mean, so Neil, it sounds very clear what Andrew's talking about, but I think it's important for people to understand why that matters, because it sounds like Trump is beholden to someone. We don't know who it is. We may never know who it is. Maybe we will. But regardless of who it is, what dangers does that pose, especially since he could be president again?
So huge dangers, Jen. So it's, first of all, like not every day that someone posts a $92 million bond.
Right. It's an important thing to remember. Close.
Yeah, and it's not even close to the biggest bond he has to post this month. And so Andrew's raising the point that if someone is guaranteeing that bond besides Trump, the way a parent might co-sign a lease for their college kid's apartment or something, that can make them indebted to that person. It could give a whole new meaning to the term political dark money. And indeed, like when you have a national security position, as you know, you go through a background check, and one of the key things they try and investigate is, who are you beholden to financially? Who are you liable to financial coercion with? And right now, we have a presidential candidate who put up a $90 million bond, who has to put up another $454 million one, and the public has absolutely no idea right now what arrangement led him to do that. Maybe he has his own assets that he's pledged as collateral, I don't know, but I suspect Judge Kaplan may get into that as early as tomorrow.
Well, looking forward to that. Who is behind it is a pretty key question here. So I want to play for both of you some of Trump's speech last night, which I hope you weren't up late watching. But he mentioned E. Jean Carroll, and I want to talk to you about it on the other side.
I just posted a $91 million bond, $91 million, on a fake story, totally made up story, $91 million, based on false accusations made about me by a woman that I knew nothing about, didn't know, never heard of. I know nothing about her.
So, Neil, let me start with you. Did you hear that? Did he cross the line? Did he defame E. Jean Carroll again?
It sure sounds like it. And Jen, there are many days that I wish I was Roberta Kaplan, who is Jean Carroll's extraordinary lawyer. She's just so phenomenal as a lawyer. But boy, today is the day I really wish I was, because Donald Trump is basically just writing the third lawsuit that she's going to file right now. And it's absolutely within her rights to bring that lawsuit and create a whole nother, you know, remember, Trump lost in front of a jury of his peers on this question of whether he had defamed Jean Carroll. And now he's doing it again. And I'm sure she's just sitting there, you know, just scribbling it all down and ready to go.
This is a sign you love your job, that you wish you were Roddy Kaplan, by the way, which is a good thing. Andrew, let me go to you. I mean, well, first of all, do you agree that he crossed the line and defamed her again? But also, I mean, even if it's he crossed the line by law, do you think Roddy Kaplan should just keep suing him? How do you feel about that for rule of law and just the cycle of it?
So I think there are two issues on that, which is there enough here for Roddy Kaplan to sue again? And I think the answer to that is yes. The issue of, you know, whether it's defamation, a jury again can make that decision. But the clip you played, and there's actually more of it, where he refers to her as being crazy. He said this happened because he has the affliction of being rich, meaning that this was just a lawsuit to, you know, as a gold digger. Those are all the kinds of things that would be the basis for a third lawsuit. And as Neil said, there are already two juries that have found him liable. Yes, she could bring this third suit. She could also do something that happened against Rudy Giuliani until he filed for bankruptcy, which is actually seeking an injunction. Because at some point, obviously, now that Donald Trump has found some sort of sugar daddy to pay up the bond in this case, he then feels no compunction going out and making these statements. Another remedy, which is harder to get, is to get an injunction that actually would be a court saying, you cannot do this anymore. At some point, you actually have to stop, because this is continuing damage to E. Jean Carroll. And as the jury found this, and this was argued successfully, this is a man who first sexually assaulted her, was found by a jury, and then continued to defame. Mm-hmm. So if you just remember who the victim is here, at some point it really has to stop. Money is no longer a sufficient deterrent.
It's E. Jean Carroll, and I love her bold statement, too. Spicy. Thank you both, as always, Neil Katyal and Andrew Weissman. Thank you so much for joining me today. And up next, I've got a few thoughts of my own about Katie Britt's response to the State of the Union. I've been saving them up, and what it tells us about just how bizarre things have gotten in the MAGAverse. And later, I'll get to talk with someone who knows a thing or two about the MAGA world, The Daily Show's Jordan Klepper. We're back after a quick break. Okay, I want to show you a headline from the Texas Tribune following the State of the Union back in 2021. It reads, "Freshman GOP Texas congressman made a personal pitch to Joe Biden. Let me help with criminal justice reform." Sounds good, right? There you see Congressman Troy Nels, mask on, making a direct appeal to President Biden as he walked down the aisle. The paper actually reported that Nels told Biden this on that night, quote, "I'm a sheriff from Texas, the most diverse county in the country. I want to help with criminal justice reform. I want to be part of that. So I don't know how to reach out to you, but I have the experience." Sounds good. Now, that kind of thing is what those big nights should be all about, right? A freshman Republican asking how he can get in touch with the Democratic president so they can work together on something the American people care about. That's exactly what Troy Nels did, and that's what he was doing in 2021. Now, fast forward. And this is what Troy Nels was doing at the State of the Union this week. Yes, that's the Trump mugshot on his T-shirt, if you can't tell. Now, what happened between 2021 and this week, you may ask? Well, the district Nels represents was gerrymandered from a Trump plus one district into a Trump plus 16 district. Also, MAGA is one hell of a drug, it turns out. But he's hardly the only example of this kind of evolution, to be fair. I mean, take Alabama Senator Katie Britt. You know her now. She came up in politics as a staffer for Senator Richard Shelby, who was sort of an old school Republican. When she got to the Senate in 2023, she was seen as one of the party's rising stars. And last year, Senator Britt didn't give the official response to the State of the Union, but she did put a response up on YouTube. And here's a little taste of what that sounded like.
My Senate Republican colleagues and I are fighting every day for faith, family, and freedom. Parents and families know best, and the state of our union is strong when parents and families are strong. Together, we can build, and we must, a bright future for generations to come.
Okay, so that was 2023, Katie, but you may not agree with everything, but it's not scary. And I'm guessing by now you've seen 2024, Katie Britt, but we're going to play it for you.
Mr. President, enough is enough. The free world deserves better, and it doesn't have to be this way. We all feel it. We hear you, and we stand with you. We are steeped in the blood of patriots. We are here because they stood back up.
So that was obviously super weird for a range of reasons, a little alarming at times, but it was also incredibly misleading. I mean, during that speech, Britt shared a graphic story about a woman who had told her about being sexually abused over and over by members of Mexican drug cartels. She implied it happened in the United States, and she told that story in an effort purposefully to criticize the Biden administration's border policy. But an independent reporter named Jonathan Katz did a little digging, and what he discovered has gone viral on TikTok for good reason. For one, he found that the victim had shared her story many times, not just to Katie Britt privately, including to Congress back in 2015. And the horrific acts she talks about actually took place in Mexico. And they happened when George W. Bush was president. So all in all, a super weird speech with at least one very misleading part about immigration. Sound familiar? It should, because it's a page out of Trump's playbook. Look, some Republican members of Congress basically entered the political world looking and acting like this. They ran as full-throated MAGA fanatics without even the pretense of waiting to govern. They didn't evolve. For others, like Troy Nehls and Katie Britt, there's been a bit of an evolution. And that tells us something important. Because even when you're elected as more of a mainstream conservative, like Troy Nehls and Katie Britt, and there are many others, there is no incentive to stay that way. Because the MAGA movement is no longer the fringe. It is the Republican Party. And in order to stay in office and rise through the ranks, you have no choice but to go full MAGA. I have spent the last few days wondering what The Daily Show's Jordan Klepper thinks about all of the crazy things we witnessed in politics this week, and there were a lot. Jordan joins me after a very quick break.
First and foremost, I'm a mom. And like any mom, I'm going to do a pivot out of nowhere into a shockingly violent story about sex trafficking. And rest assured, every detail about it is real, except the year, where it took place, and who was president when it happened.
I think it's fair to say Saturday Night Live had a lot to work with this week, and I imagine the writers over at The Daily Show are already hard at work. So much material, they may not know what to do with it. Joining me now is Jordan Klepper. He's a contributor for The Daily Show, and I'm so excited to welcome him back to the show. So I have been wondering what the thought bubble was going on in your head when you were watching that Katie Britt response. There's a lot to unpack there, but what did you make of it?
Well, it was definitely my least favorite Tennessee Williams play, but I was glad to see it resurfacing again. I think, frankly, performative outrage is a skill, and it's something that you saw her take her first swing at, which is always an exciting time for a performer. As a failed actor myself, I know what it's like to be handed a shaky script and not have the skills to really communicate with my audience. And I felt a certain kinship with the senator there. But she gave it her best. She knew who she was playing to in an oddly sexual way more often than not. It felt like she was coming on to the moderate GOP moms of America with stories of human trafficking. But hey, if that's the game plan, good luck.
She did tell a horrific story, as you mentioned, involving a migrant and human trafficking. She strongly implied it happened in the United States on Joe Biden's watch. It actually happened in Mexico when George W. Bush was president. So let's just listen to what she said on Thursday night and how she tried to clean it up this morning.
We wouldn't be okay with this happening in a third world country. This is the United States of America, and it is past time, in my opinion, that we start acting like it. President Biden's border policies are a disgrace.
Did you mean to give the impression that this horrible story happened on President Biden's watch?
No, Shannon, look, I very specifically said this is what President Biden did during his first 100 days. Minutes after coming into office, he stopped all deportations.
So, look, I mean, it's a horrible story, but she clearly got herself into a bit of a pickle there. I mean, do you feel watching that she cleared things up for everyone? And what do you think? I mean, because you have spent a lot of time with MAGA voters at rallies. How do you think they digested her performance and even her cleanup this morning?
Well, I don't think a lot of people pay attention to the cleanup. It's one thing to go on Fox News and Sunday morning, but a lot of the people I talk to at MAGA events have only seen the out of context clip they put online. And so, yeah, I think she got the headlines she needed. She spoke with fear. She spoke with outrage. She had the headlines. I think those got digested into the MAGA sphere. This follow-up. What happened this morning, I think it's compelling. I'm happy to see media pushing back on that narrative. But yet again, that's not how people digest the narrative. They digest the initial tidbit and they move on. So I think probably from her perspective, in many ways, mission accomplished.
Crazy to say, but you talked to a lot of these voters. Now, before Super Tuesday, you ventured to a Nikki Haley rally in North Carolina, and I want to play a little piece of you talking to a Haley voter about why she'd still support Donald Trump in a general election, just to give everyone a taste of what you witnessed there.
Why can't you be done with Donald Trump?
And sex cases and all the, I mean, come on, just the fact that you have all the criminal stuff.
It's insane.
It is insane.
No one should support him for president.
No.
Yes.
But, yeah.
But if it's him versus Biden, you will support him for president.
I think so, yeah.
Oh, come on.
You were all of us in that moment. So, I mean, look, you talk to a lot of these voters. I mean, what is your biggest takeaway from all those conversations you had with these Haley voters? They're horrified by Trump, but a lot of them would still vote for him from the ones you talked to.
We were really curious about that question of where this group of voters goes. I think the big takeaway is I think the Biden team needs to be worried about this. These folks didn't need to be explained to about the dangers of Donald Trump. They articulated it better than a lot of the folks on the left that I've talked to would articulate their fears and their anxieties. But also, Joe Biden is dead in the water in their minds. He needs to articulate a vision to get them back on that page. I expected there to be much more openness to the idea of accepting somebody outside of their original party. But when we pressed, a lot of people said they wouldn't vote, but most people went back to knowing they don't want to support a Donald Trump presidency, but not being able to allow themselves to support the idea of Joe Biden as president. So we walked away feeling like Joe Biden needs to start communicating to these voters or find a whole new option, because the Joe Biden in their mind is one with which they will not support.
Hard to watch. Okay, before I let you go real fast, everybody wants to know, how much Jon Stewart talk of Katie Britt is there going to be tomorrow night? What should we expect?
Well, I'm always excited to go into the morning meetings where we get to digest the news of the day or the weekend. And so that's what I have the best job in the world, where we all get to sit around a table. We would get to watch the chaos around us and make lots of lovely, insightful, thoughtful jokes and or cries to the gods about the things that we saw. So I definitely assume there'll be a little bit of a Senator Britt talk tomorrow on The Daily Show.
I bet. Lots to work with last week. We'll all be tuning in, of course. Jordan Klepper, thank you so much for your time. Really appreciate it. And I love all the stuff you do out there. It's so interesting. Coming up next, I sit down with my former boss, John Kerry, for his exit interview as he steps down as the U.S. Special Presidential Envoy for Climate. We'll talk about his career in public service and what concerns him most about the next few months. We're back after a quick break.
Time for a quick break to talk about McDonald's. Mornings are for mixing and matching at McDonald's. For just $3, mix and match two of your favorite breakfast items, including a sausage McMuffin, sausage biscuit, sausage burrito, and hash browns. Make it even better with a delicious medium iced coffee. With McDonald's Mix and Match, you can't go wrong. Price and participation may vary. Cannot be combined with any other offer or combo meal. Single item at regular price.
Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. With the internet's best converting checkout, 36% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms, Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers. In fact, Shopify powers 10% of all e-commerce in the U.S. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/podcastfree. All lowercase, shopify.com/podcastfree, shopify.com/podcastfree.
He's a decorated war veteran. He's been a U.S. senator. He's been a presidential nominee. He's been a secretary of state. And he just wrapped up his term as the first ever U.S. special presidential envoy for climate. It goes without saying that John Kerry has had a remarkable career in public service, much of which I was fortunate to have a front row seat to witness. And at a time when decades of public service is somehow being painted by some as a political flaw, his career is a testament to the benefit of experience and wisdom. So as Secretary Kerry prepared to close this chapter, I sat down with him for his exit interview. I wanted to just start with what you've talked about as one of your biggest accomplishments. You recently had some significant success at the UN Climate Summit in December, right around your birthday, I'll just note. You taught me when I was working for you, you have to work with and talk to people even when you have major disagreements. Even when you may look at the Chinese, as many people do, and say, well, they're manipulating the currency, they are human rights abusers. But you had to work with them to get this done. So talk to me a little bit about why that's so important when it comes to making progress diplomatically.
Well, I think, first of all, President Biden came into office deeply committed to this issue. Within hours of being sworn in, he rejoined the Paris Agreement. He charged me with the responsibility to build a team that could go out and rebuild America's credibility in the world because it was in tatters. The prior president had pulled out of the Paris Agreement, and our credibility was on the floor, I mean, in the tank. Ultimately, it required us to really go out and do climate diplomacy. And that's what the president wanted, and that's what we did.
When you went back and you started, you had to rebuild a great deal of relationships with the world, as did President Biden, as did Secretary Blinken. What were those conversations like?
Well, in the early year, it was inundation with that conversation because everybody was saying, well, what happens if you know who comes back? Mm-hmm. And so we really thought about that hard because it was a key to being able to move people forward and come together around some kind of major step as we did in Dubai. But the real key was that the economy has already changed. Mm-hmm. Globally, companies, the biggest companies in the world, are moving to deal with the climate crisis.
Let me ask you about disinformation. You've talked about this quite a bit lately in terms of disinformation on climate. You've been the target of disinformation. When you ran for president and your career, your military service was tarnished by the Swift Boat veterans, you have been very aggressive, I would say, since then in fighting back against disinformation. Talk to me a little bit about what you've learned and why it's so important to fight back.
Well, if you lose the truth as the centerpiece of decision making and of aspirations in a country, you've lost democracy. You have to have truth. And we don't have the same arbiters, the same referees that we used to have in our political structure. First of all, politicians are not the best validators anymore in our country.
Because of distrust?
Because of
Congress.
Distrust, because it all seems to sound the same, mm-hmm. because people don't seem to see enough progress in different areas that they'd like to see progress. Because there's gridlock after gridlock, budget after budget doesn't pass. People are looking at that and saying, this isn't working very well. And mind you, and I think you know this, in other countries, particularly countries that aren't that friendly, this is being exploited. People are pointing to it and saying, look at these guys. They're incapable of making, they're not the great, strong, big America that we knew in the past. Now, obviously, we're the most powerful military on the face of the planet. We're the largest economy in the world still. But there are doubts about whether or not we can get the job done and lead in the way that we used to.
I do have to ask you about Russia. Do you think they're going to intervene in our election again? Do you worry about that? Do you worry?
They're already intervening in our election. I mean, that is happening now. And others probably are also engaged in that. It's going to be absolutely critical that you all in the media help the American people writ large to be able to understand the disinformation and what is happening. It is really at a level that is deeply, deeply disturbing.
One of the things that's difficult for people to evaluate themselves is, you know, you have foreign countries, as you know well, who have their own audiences. And I wanted to ask you about Putin, because he keeps threatening that he's going to use nuclear weapons. Is that something people should be fearful of in this country?
I think that Russia and President Putin have a lower bar in their philosophy about nuclear weapons and war scenarios. And so I think one has to be not intimidated, but truly alert to what the potential is to get into a situation that spirals out of control. I think Putin and others are probably watching with great interest whether or not who will be the next president of the United States. People need to ask themselves very carefully who they feel has the experience and the temperament and the record of managing that kind of potential out of control conflict in the way that President Biden has.
You've known Joe Biden for a long time. What do you think people don't understand about him?
Well, I think there's a standard being applied to him, which is sort of a double standard.
How so?
Well, I think if you look at the leading candidate for president on the Republican side, there are a lot of things. You know, I'm uncomfortable getting into the politics of this, but I just, you know, there are a whole series of actions over time that really would raise very serious doubts about running for president. I mean, years ago, candidacies would have ended long ago with many of the kinds of things that have been made public over these last years. And I want to come back to one point. The Republican Party traditionally has been a party of strength and of, you know, feeling important to stand up for American values in the world. Our values are being fought for by other people in Ukraine. If we don't stand up there, yes, it will happen somewhere else and we will be dragged in. History tells us that. The whole history of the last century tells us that. And I am so sad and angry about the fact that some young soldier is in a ditch out there in Ukraine fighting for those principles and doesn't have enough ammunition, isn't able to do what he needs to do today. Every American should be incensed at the notion that we are contributing to that crisis and perhaps to the loss of life for that person who is willing to fight for our values. And they're not getting the support they need from us.
You have had a career rooted in these global values. Have you ruled out ever going back and serving again in public service?
No. God willing, if I continue to, you know, feel healthy and energized as I do. No, I look forward to it. And I also look forward to having some time. You know, you asked me what I'm going to do. I promised my grandson for Christmas that he was going to go to the Manchester City /Liverpool game coming up.
Are you going to take him?
And yes, indeed.
Oh, that's pretty good.
With his family, too.
Of course. Well, that's something you'll look forward to. My thanks to my old boss, John Kerry, for sitting down with me this week. Can't see what he's going to do next. Looking forward to it. I have one more thing to share with you today, and I'll tell you about it after a quick break. That does it for me today, but we're already working on tomorrow night's show. Two stand-up members of Congress will join me, Congressman Adam Schiff, who is fresh off his big win in California's Senate primary, and Congressman Dan Goldman joins me ahead of special counsel Robert Kerr's testimony this week.
Time for a quick break to talk about McDonald's. Mornings are for mixing and matching at McDonald's. For just $3, mix and match two of your favorite breakfast items, including a sausage McMuffin, sausage biscuit, sausage burrito, and hash browns. Make it even better with a delicious medium-iced coffee. With McDonald's Mix and Match, you can't go wrong. Price and participation may vary. Cannot be combined with any other offer or combo meal. Single item at regular price.